Welcome to Germany versus USA. Am I talking to Jim? Is this Jim talking?
Alex, I'm in trouble, man.
So I woke up, was it yesterday or 2 days ago in the morning? Usually, like, when Jim and I communicate, we send, like, few messages with few words and, you know, usually accompanied by something funny, humorous. But yesterday morning when I woke up, I had like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 links, words by Jim that were just like really worrying and terrifying. What did you spend time on, Jim?
Oh, man. All right. So I... Even though we don't talk about it a lot in the show, because I do have angst against technology, I do actually work in a pretty tech-driven job, and I have to be somewhat competent around technology, even though I hate it. And the floodgates just finally opened this week, where AI is everywhere, Alex. So... everyone has seen in the news, ChatGPT, what it can and what it can't do. I was mentally prepared for that. I was okay.
I was excited that you were like so fast this time, because I think ChatGPT came up in like November, December. and we're only in February and you brought it up. So usually there's like a year later that you're...
like when I got really excited about buying my outdated AirPods. And then yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I was aware of it.
But
it kind of crept out of nowhere to all of a sudden... like it's really being leveraged. So for instance, like it's replacing copywriters. It's helping write work emails. There was a really bad PR move this week in the news where a prominent university used it to write a condolence email about the Michigan State shooting and then forgot to take the tag off, like written by... ChatGPT, right? It's just all of a sudden just like really, and you're asking yourself, ooh. And so I was like, okay, you know, people are going to use this and whatever. It's just like there's other things out there to help you write, Grammarly, Hemingway app. I get this thing can like write a, you know, kid's story or, you know, make up a fake novel or whatever. But then I sat through a bunch of meetings where now we're using AI to write storyboards or replace models with AI generated fictitious people because we don't want to use licensing rights. Or how can I take this one AI bot, help write a proposal, then put it into this other A-bot for like cross-checking it. So all of a sudden I was like, whoa, wait a second. How much AI is out there? And I just went down a rabbit hole of sending Alex some links. And we can actually, we'll provide some of these in the notes.
But dude, I mean, I was afraid to click them because you freaked me out. So I didn't click them. And like some of them looked really scary also. Like this like last selfie on Earth. It's like, ooh.
Oh my God. Yeah. And like, there's one where this one startup took a bunch of, I think World War One journal entries and loaded it. And then the AI reconstructed the person, the situation, and made like a little story out of it. And to me, it just felt like a violation. I don't know the emotion that like how to convey it. Like, I'm not trying to run away from the technology. We're at the age, I guess, just to take a step back, we're at the age where age and social class, because I think that you should preference that, where we didn't have internet in our households until we were already in formative years, right? And we both grew up in probably the last generation of fundamental analog learning where technology was being integrated. Mm-hmm. So I've used this example before, but when I entered into university, when I wrote a paper, I was not allowed to use a source that was online. When I mm-hmm. finished grad school, all of my sources were through online in that just that window of time, right?
Couple of years, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And now I'm just now we're at this point where it's, you know, we've talked about social media and other tech integration, but I look at this advancement in AI from a written standpoint. Now, ChatGPT sucks at math, by the way. If you want to have some fun, start like start asking it to do some math, and then you're like, yes, I still have a chance. But it can write you an essay, right? It can write you a term paper. It can write a thesis, and that's insane to me.
Yeah, you sent me something the other day that I thought was super interesting. You asked the ChatGPT, what do people like about the podcast Germany versus USA? And the response is, the podcast Germany versus USA. So that's, you know, that's an artificial intelligence answering. The podcast Germany versus USA is a show that explores the cultural differences and similarities between two countries. It is hosted by a German and an American who share their personal experiences and observations. People enjoy the podcast because it offers an entertaining and an informative perspective on cultural differences, language, politics, and social norms. The hosts have a good rapport, and listeners appreciate their ability to bring humor and a lighthearted approach to serious topics. Additionally, the podcast has a strong community of listeners who engage with the hosts through social media and offer their own insights and experiences. So, first of all, thanks, ChatGPT. That sounds way more glamorous and nicer than we are. But it's interesting because at certain points, I can see where they got the information from, like in our bio on YouTube or our bio on the podcast description. But some are like, okay, so it must have looked at the ratings on iTunes and the contents of the rating on iTunes. It must have, you know, cross-referenced that with, you know, additional information that I'm not sure where it's from. So just that is pretty impressive.
I was just glad it was positive about the Facebook group, which occasionally when we look in, I'm like, whoa.
Well, I don't think it went through the Facebook group. I don't know.
man, that thing, just like ChatGPT, is taking a life of its own. Yeah.
Why are we selling GVU tokens in that Facebook group?
What is a token? Yeah. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on it? And is it impacting your work or your life yet? Because it has come full force into my work with just like a tidal wave. It wasn't there yesterday. And I've spent the past 2 weeks going over the details of where and how you can use it, you know, methods of use with a lot of clients, because they're trying to get their arms around it as well. And it just seems like it just almost came out of nowhere, even though I know it's been simmering for a long time.
Yeah. I think the capabilities have been there for quite a few years, actually. It's just that, you know, with ChatGPT, for some reason, it's like also like a media wave that, you know, and it made it accessible to everyone, basically. I find it interesting why we are so fascinated by it. Because, like, a lot of the information and stuff that if you ask ChatGPT, you can find, of course, through Google, but it's just that, like, ChatGPT is way smarter in, like, figuring out the right strings of information and putting them back together so you have this highly individual response, right? You don't have different, like, search results, you just have one written result in the case of ChatGPT, which is kind of similar in a way, I think. It's just highly individualized and like put together. But I think what you described earlier about like they put a lot of information about like the journals from World War One soldiers in like an engine and like an artificial intelligence engine, and what came out. And I think that's where it's really weird, because you're taking something real, throwing it into something artificial, and because there's this real artifacts in there, I forget the word you described it as, but like it just seems really almost like forbidden, that
a violation. It feels like a violation. Yeah.
Yeah. That comes out, and I kind of I'm still trying to wrap my head around the reality and disreality, or the artificial part, like how what that makes in our brain, and how that works. And I think that's just I think I described it to you as like how the universe is endless, and somehow to me that is similar. That and as you described it, I thought about this morning actually when I wrote to work, the intellectual property problems with like images.
Oh yeah, I mean there's so much to figure out still, and that. Like some of the stuff I've seen, they'll take a picture of a real person, and then it will the AI will modify that image into a fictitious person using the realism mm-hmm. of that individual. But now you don't have the usage rights because, you can change the hair or a few mm-hmm. facial features or whatever, and it just becomes, I don't know, it becomes this infringement game. And you know, with ChatGPT, what I think caught my attention more than anything is I can upload a writing sample or send, here's my last five, you know, pieces of content or whatever I've done for my job. And then I can say, write, using my style, write my next, you know, industry piece.
Mm-hmm.
And it will spit something out to you that is scarily accurate very quickly, and then you can refine it.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with it is sometimes it's completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get outside of your swim lane and you try to be smarter than, I would say, your training or your background, you may be tricked by the AI in thinking that it's accurate because it's so well written, mm-hmm. right? It's really well, it's
very eloquent, yeah.
Right? But it doesn't mean it's true. So there's a little bit of a sand trap there.
Actually, you can, if you look at the text that about our podcast, it's like, you know, the hosts have a good rapport. Yeah, that's not something people usually report, is a word that's rarely ever used. So you can tell they really focused on. Like a language, on using like proper language, linguistically, very nice. And I think that's also something to kind of like perhaps distract a little bit from the content sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so Skynet's here, Alex. We're in for it.
What I was thinking about, what I read somewhere at the beginning, I'm not sure if that is true, because, you know, ChatGPT is free right now, and I think you can, if you want to get like faster responses or more responses, you can sign up and for a subscription, but it's also like $10 a month or whatever, like also fairly cheap. But I read that the actual like power it or the actual resources it takes to, you know, to respond to these kind of questions are insanely high. Like computing power, of actually energy resources of servers that are being used. So I read at the again that was like in December or something that someone said that yes, it's interesting right now and it's nice, but it's going to be very, very expensive at a certain point because calculating that and computing that is just factually expensive.
Oh yeah, I mean, thank God for American chips.
I bought the book. I haven't read it, but I bought the book.
Okay, yeah. So that's part of it. The other thing, it's free right now because they want as much content consumption as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But also people should know, even though we're, you know, in late February right now, this specific AI is all the way up to the end of 2021, wherever they launched it, November, December. Mm-hmm. There's no new input data being put in right now that's publicly accessible. So if you want to summarize a book that comes out in March, right now ChatGPT can't,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's only pulling legacy. Eventually, it will become dynamic in real time, but it's not there yet.
Yeah.
It
tells a little bit about the amount of data that they must be processing and where they, you know, So that's going to be interesting. Resource consumption. On these kind of like processes for artificial intelligence. the people from the island, Jim, and like the people from the island.
The English speaking people?
Yes, from which they sent the prisoners to Australia. England, the UK, has conducted a study, interesting.
Oh, Alex, you can just call it England. It's only going to be the UK for another 25, 30 years tops.
Okay. Anyway, they did a study about a four-day work week, or they did, I guess, a pilot program, whatever they called it. And so a bunch of companies, and I think I read somewhere it was like 2,000 or 3,000 people at 60, yeah, included 2,900 workers at 61 companies, anything from nonprofits, manufacturers to finance firms, even like fish and chip shop. It's interesting. And they made an experiment for half a year that all employees would only work a four-day work week, basically, instead of five, as it's the usual. And the results were, for some people, surprising, but they were actually that even though the people worked only 4 days a week, the revenue increased on average by a couple percent. People were happier. The output was higher. So
turnover was greatly reduced, which is huge capital, right?
Yeah, that's true. And so all in all, it was like a very positive result for the four-day work week. So Jim, how many decades is it going to take until like the US even thinks about it?
We're never going there. I get frustrated on the weekends when places aren't open, like at 6 a.m. So what do you mean you're not open? I don't know, man. I mean, you have such a push now with like the digital nomads and working remote. And do you go back to the office? Is there hybrid 4 day, 5 day? I've been very fortunate in my professional career where I've always been in a very independent role at multiple jobs I've had. So I've not been stuck in the construct of a 5 day work week. Now, my job now and the job I've had for quite some time, it is a 5 day work week job, but it's also flexible in the sense of get your work done, manage your own schedule, and make sure your billables and everything are right. I think maybe you'll see more and more industries go to that model where you're not in that legacy 9 to 5.
Just time-based, right? Yeah.
Time-based, yeah. More time-based. But I don't know. From overall, there's still like, I mean, look at Elon Musk and all his various companies and the push to go back full-time. And obviously there's major pushback on that, but it's a mindset that is very normal in, I think, American industry of, 5-6 day grind. I can say, I'm talking a little bit out of both sides of my mouth with my, I'm fortunate with the flexibility of my job, but at the same time, I had a comment to my wife where I was like, God, I got to take a vacation just to get some work done. Just to get away from all the meetings the time. And so I think it's almost more of a, I don't know if it's a 4 or 5 day work week situation or if it's just an efficiency.
This seems internal like efficiency issue, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like since we've been remote for the past 3 years or hybrid or whatever you want to say, the amount of meetings and inefficiencies, in my opinion, have greatly increased. Mm-hmm. Where you could go to a 4 day work week if you just stuck to better process and procedures. Mm-hmm, and I think a lot of American industries could benefit with less meetings, more rigid approach, more of that framework. I don't know what is. I mean, I know France did a study similar 4 day work week.
Yeah.
So is Germany adopting that model?
No, but actually, a couple of my friends, like our age, they actively decided when they were applying for a job or interviewing for a job, they would say, I only want to work 4 days. And that's, wait, yeah. What?
That was part of like their requirement? Like,
yeah.
I'm applying this job. Okay.
Yeah.
How's that received?
they both have jobs 4 days now.
Okay.
It's and the thing is, like, there's a shift in mindset, and like or there's a generational shift here in Germany that especially the boomers are like kind of like talking about, often like with negative tone. Oh, these young people, you know, they don't want to work anymore. And it's true. They don't want to work there like 40, 50 hours a week. I don't want to work 40, 50 hours a week because I don't think it makes sense, because I wouldn't, you know, see my family, see, you know, my kids. So, and so there's this mindset, especially with like the generation Z and generation Y, like us millennials as well, a little bit, that the work is not everything. And so that request that I talked about, like only working 4 days, or sometimes a friend of mine who was in the consulting business, where, you know, over hours, like overtime is just classic, right? And he just demanded, or he just asked that, he's like, hey, I want to work my 38 hours or whatever it was and then be done. And he started working, and they promised that that would be it. And of course he had to do overtime all the time. And then he quit after like 3 months because he said, no, it wasn't the deal. And so, and you will see a lot of that perspective with like German employees these times, that they don't take a job, or that they will, you know, they will want to be flexible on their working hours.
Yeah, it's a big topic to tackle, because I think broad strokes, like everyone's like, yeah, 4 day work week, be more efficient, have better mental health. It sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all for it. I'm not against it, right?
But before I forget, like the two friends I talked about that got the 4 hour work week, they of course also didn't get the salary for 5 days though, right? So that's not
mm-hmm.
they didn't get the full salary. They got, you know, they got a little less. I mean, I'm self employed. I have my own little company, and I work on different projects. And so, like, I never work more than 4 days a week. If I'm honest, I work at different times, and there's like phases when I have to work. Like sometimes there's like acute phases where I work like 50 hours a week, but barely ever happens. But I think if you put it together, I don't work more than the 4 days a week, because I know I have like 2 3-hour phases in a day where I'm, or perhaps 2 2-hour phases in a day where I'm super efficient and where I get like 90% of the work done. And after like years of trying to spend more time, like spending like 8 hours a day or 10 hours a day to get like the output done, I realized now it's fine if you just get your like 2 90-minute or 3 90-minute sessions of like really efficient work done, and that's it.
Yeah, I see. I think that's part that people haven't looked into enough, of the sacrifice, like the pros and cons, right? I want to work 4 days a week. Well, I get 4 days a week compensation, right? Better mental health, less compensation. And yeah, each country has their own economic restrictions, right? Of there's certain, you know, I know, look, in America, people, I almost feel like working 4 days a week is a luxury. For you mm-hmm. have to almost be from a certain social standing to even to be there, because the grind is real, and especially mm-hmm. if you're working in more what I call, more of the labor market or minimum wage market, which has its own problems. Like you're going to have more than one job, probably some side hustles, and that gets into a much more complicated conversation. Yeah, I think on the surface, it's great for it, but there's consequences and drawbacks that you have to take into account. I have one of my good friends worked for a tech startup where it was one of those unlimited vacation, just get your work done.
Mm-hmm.
And man, did he exploit that. Really mm-hmm. enjoyed it.
Never.
And then he never got promoted. And when they finally had a round of layoffs, he was on it.
Oh, and okay. So he actually took advantage of it, and they punished him basically for it?
Right.
Okay.
So, and you get into this, yes, in theory it was great. Yes, you were doing your work. Yes, you're going to be stagnant in your career because of it. Is that right? Is that fair? I'm not, you know, who knows?
It requires like also like the capability for a company or an employer like to look mid to or long term, even like If you look short term, of course, it's not going to work. But I think
for me, and that's like the long term, like my viewpoint on it is it's not compensation, it's mental health.
Yeah.
So if you can get to a 4-day work week and you are happier, more fulfilled, spending more time in your hobbies, your families, your friends, you're going to be a better worker. You know, and your output's going to be better. You're going to be more focused, happier. So I think I love that aspect of it. And because you don't want the burnout or the toxicity or the turnover.
Yeah, 100%.
So yeah, if you can get there, that's great. Alex, so I've been traveling a lot for work recently, and I always FaceTime my wife in the evenings or like at dinner time to like say hello to the little human and her. And so I was asking her the other day, I was like, well, what are you doing this evening? And she was like, oh, tonight it's a guilty pleasure night. I'm going to watch Below Deck. And I was like, oh, you never watch that when I'm home. And she's like, yeah, because you would hate it. It's a guilty pleasure. And so I'm going to take advantage of it because you're gone. And it made me think, Alex, what are your guilty pleasures?
So first of all, what's the show called again? I've never heard of it, I think.
Below Deck. Okay. So it's a reality show about people working on yachts.
Oh, and okay.
That's about all I know. I think they work in the yacht, on the yacht, service clients, party.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of like Real World, but on a yacht.
Okay, yeah, I followed like a chef on a yacht. That was interesting, like on an Instagram channel, and she was like cooking different stuff. That was cool. Okay, yeah, guilty pleasure is an interesting term because it doesn't literally translate to German. I mean, there's...
It sounds dirty, right? It sounds a little dirty.
A little bit.
When you first hear it.
Usually it's not. Like the proper translation in German would be ein sündhaftes oder ein heimliches Vergnügen oder ein Laster.
And that just rolls right off your tongue in conversation.
But it would be like schuldiges Vergnügen, but schuldig is guilty, is the English sense of guilty is more like sündig. So would be, yeah, I don't know, sündhaftes Vergnügen, like secret or heimliches Vergnügen. And I have like one of my like the weirdest one I have that I can say publicly is is actually it's a really weird one. I don't know where it's from. My wife, she makes fun of me so much. But do you know when you have like when you have a pillow and you have actual feathers in there, right?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes there are certain pillows where you can feel the little like sharp tips of the feathers like sticking out. You know, yep. I have this really compulsive behavior to, if I feel like there's a little like tiny spike, I need to pull it out. Like I need to, and I can spend hours because you know, sometimes you have pillows that have a lot of these, and I literally like my wife had to hide some of those pillows from me because I would be like, I would pick at them for hours and leave like hundreds of feathers somewhere. I mean, I'll clean them up then later, but that's for some reason, I really, it makes me so happy and calms me down, like picking those feathers from pillows. That's like a very weird guilty pleasure. I got to start with that one, Jim.
Well, when I come visit you in the well-funded, well-state-funded nursing home in Germany, I'll be sure to bring you a down pillow so you can pluck all the feathers out.
Yeah, pluck them out. That's the right term. Yeah, exactly. So that's a weirdly guilty pleasure for me. Can you counter that, Jim?
I don't know. So I was thinking, because look, I got a lot of weird about me. I know that from a guilty pleasure standpoint, I think it almost helps to put it in like context, like by category.
Yeah.
Like one for me is like music. What's a guilty pleasure? Music. Like what do I want to turn up loud in my car, but like be by myself? You know? Like Katy Perry is a guilty pleasure, right?
Match.
Like
I'm gonna match. Yes.
Right. Like that's a guilty pleasure of mine. Like I'm gonna turn her up in the car, sing along, and just be really, really happy.
Roar. Yep. Yep.
So, you know, that's like an example. Oh, man, I don't know, like some other guilty pleasure, like some bad TV. I really like the speaking of the Brits, I really like the Great Pottery Throwdown as a what reality show. It's just potters, as they say, but it's a reality show of people making different pottery.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And I am so fascinated by it. But you also know me well enough where, like, what's the number one thing about pottery?
I don't know. Oh, it's like your fingers that are like dirty, right?
Right. Which, you know me, I could never do because I would hate getting my hands dirty or sticky or messy. And so I'm just like, oh, I can't do it because it would drive me insane. But I love watching and consuming it as a guilty pleasure. Like, oh, like I wish I could get over my own insanity to actually make pottery, but there's just no way.
I just had to think of that scene from The Naked Gun, from the Files of Police Squad, or whatever. I don't know which one it was, from The Naked Gun, you know, where Leslie Nielsen is like doing pottery and there's like a fifth hand or something reaching in. Yeah. He's with the woman.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Guilty pleasures, man. Like, it's so hard. It's like just things that aren't necessarily bad, but like you don't want like the public to know, or maybe your significant other to know, or maybe she or he would laugh at you if they did know.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, these shows where, well, I think they're called like America's Best Home Videos or whatever way, you know, people usually hurt themselves. And
yeah. Like, America's Funniest Videos.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Yeah. These kind of shows. Yeah. I mean, there were a couple in Germany on Super RTL, and I don't know, for some reason, I can watch that for hours. I mean, it's super cheesy, right? It's super cheesy, but there are certain scenes when people do stuff, I can't help it. I laugh out so loud. And my dad does the same, by the way. Like when I sit with my dad and watch these shows, like people around us are just like, what the fuck is happening with them? I don't know. It just makes me like giggle like a teenage, I don't know. And, I can watch that for hours, but as long as people don't hurt themselves like severely, that I can't watch.
Right. Yeah. Just a good, painful experience that you can fully recover from.
Yeah, not even painful, but it's just, I don't know, for some reason I have to cry sometimes because I have to laugh so hard when I watch that. Usually, I don't know, I don't know why. It's just perhaps inherited from my dad.
Guilty pleasures, Alex. So that's, the pillow one just has me thrown, so this is for a loop. that's something more in my like wheelhouse of insanity of just like, I see you down pillow.
I have another guilty pleasure, which actually works a little bit into the 4-day work week, is you know, I have my own office, like my own office, and I have a sleeping couch in there, and so every once in a while, usually after lunch, I take a little nap in the office. just lay down for, I don't know, half an hour sometimes. Usually it's like half an hour, like, because otherwise you're just too groggy actually to get up. But I often like, I drink a coffee before I lay down. So,
That's a trick. That's like a good trick.
Like the caffeine kicks in, so I don't actually fall asleep deeply. But I will actually take a nap every once in a while in my office on my couch. And it's awesome. It's like a proud pleasure, actually. It's a kind of, I don't talk about it so much though.
It's a Don Draper moment. You have like a 4-finger bourbon and it's like, all right, I'm going to take a reflection nap real quick.
I mean, all the Japanese or many Japanese people, like they nap under the desk, when like at work, and well, I just have
that's because they work nonstop and they're not going to implement four-day work weeks, Alex. Why they're the number two economy in the world and they're just crushing.
Yeah, but then people die because they work themselves.
I know, I'm not saying it's good, I'm just saying their bodies are shutting down and they're like, yeah, I just need to hide under. Like,
they should take naps and go home. It's a lot healthier.
It is. Yeah. I think I was trying to think of like other random guilty pleasures. Yeah, one I have that's like, I don't know if it's a guilty pleasure. It's just association, almost like a habit.
Mm-hmm.
But like if I go to a sporting event, like I want a hot dog and a beer and like a funnel cake.
Oh, like, yeah.
You know, like if I go to like a baseball game,
yeah,
it's really a baseball game. Like that's just like to me, like quintessential experience. But it, you know, if I go to a soccer match or football or whatever, like I want that stadium hot dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to know the details about the hot dog or the origin or like, I don't want to know. But I just want the hot dog and like the shitty like light beer that I'm overpaying for. And then like just to make myself feel wonderful, then I finish it all with just like a funnel cake, which is just like a fried with powdered sugar all over it. And it's just so unhealthy, but so good. Yeah, so that's like, yeah.
I'm sending you like two images right now that you need to check on your messages app, because and I took those this morning especially for you because we talked about it in the other episode actually, and
nice, this is brochen and all the breads and the deli, yes, and pigs in the blanket. Well, those are big pigs in the blanket.
We talked about it the other episode. Yeah.
Why are they priced so strangely? $2.29?
Yeah.
What?
Okay. And they call it butter croissant mit Würstchen. So no pigs in the blanket. It's the literal German. This is a butter croissant with a Würstchen inside. This is not a pig. What do you call this pig?
The French are so proud of this. I'm going to just ruin it with this big sausage.
We're talking about pigs in the blanket. And I said that you usually only see them in these self-serving like bakeries where you pick, you know, stuff up yourself and put them with like a weird tongue that's been, I don't know, it's not super hygienic, and put it in your own little bag. And I discovered them this morning.
There is something fantastic about that, though. That looks like a classy deli. But mm-hmm. something about getting like brat or like a late night snack from like a street vendor or mm-hmm. like a curryverse stand that just looks like it should have been condemned 20 years ago. Like, you know, there's some type of joy, sick joy in there for me of like, yes, I definitely want to try this like street food. To the point at one time, like 20 years ago at this point, I was in the UK. God, the Brits are just all over this episode. And I'd had my fair share of pints, and so I was hungry, and I found a street vendor, and I got, you know, a hot dog or like some type of sandwich, and I ate it. And then like in clarity of mind, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get mad cow disease because I just ate this food. This is one thing I wasn't supposed to do. I wasn't supposed to do it. I ate some type of random street beef, and like now like my eyeballs are going to melt.
Were you afraid yourself, or did like, I don't know, your mom or your parents tell you not to eat that kind of
meat? No, so, like they had told me not to do it before, and of course then I did it, and then I got really nervous about it for, like, longer than I should have been, like yeah. Like, you know, weeks later when I was fully healthy, I'd still like occasionally, like, is the mad cow coming? Is it coming? Do I have it yet?
Well, as we're running in circles, Jim, I think it's time to end this episode.
Absolutely. I think that's about it for us today.
Yep.
Thanks for listening. Until next time, y'all take it easy.
Cheers.